former chief technology officer, created Thinking Machines Lab. All of them are now competing to try and dominate this technology and try and make it in their own image.
And finally, this regulation within the so-called Big Beautiful Bill that says that AI can't be regulated by states for a decade?
This is absolutely going to enshrine the impunity of Silicon Valley into law. I mean, I call this these empires of AI because they are already quickly becoming the apex predator in the ecosystem, able to act in their self-interest. And that bill, if passed, would certainly codify that.
Well, we're going to do a part two posted online at democracynow.org. Karen Howe is author of Empire of AI, Dreams and Nightmares, and Sam Altman's OpenAI. Tune in tomorrow on Democracy Now! When we speak with the British journalist Carol Cadwallader about how to survive the broligarchy. We've got three job openings, senior headline news producer, a director of audience, and a director of technology, all full-time here in New York. You can learn more at democracynow.org/jobs. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terrasana, and Tammy Wirth, Shireen Nandura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
What do we mean when we talk about personality? What is your personality? It is the way you get along with other people around you. And with your changing environment.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
To kick off Pride Month and celebrate Portland's LGBTQ plus community, KBOO will be hosting Queer Joy Fest on Friday, June 6th from 6 to 10 p.m. at the Foster Food Carts. There will be live music, vendors, food and drinks, and more. More information at kboo.fm/queerjoyfest.
Join KBOO around the campfire. Become a member during Camp KBOO's Summer Drive, taking place now through June 29th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, about 20% of people currently enrolled in Medicaid could lose it if Trump's reconciliation bill is passed by the Senate.
OPB and Lewis and Clark University are partnering to help journalists use the Oregon public records law.
And Elon Musk is keeping his money to himself after stepping down from Doge.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 4th, 2025. KBOO is currently in our summer membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Hannah Francis.
And I'm Dave Johnson. Oregon Public Broadcasting and Lewis and Clark University are creating the Public Records and Government Transparency Project. This will be the first project of its kind in the United States. It will provide legal resources for journalists in Oregon and provide information on how to access public records and how to tackle deep dive reporting on the government and elected officials. Oregon public records law gives the public access to state and local government records, but this is hard to do without legal training. This fall, the Public Records and Government Transparency Project will train Lewis and Clark law students in the laws and standards around Oregon public records law. PRGT will also provide legal support to media organizations and journalists throughout the state. The program will give students experience working with attorneys to assess legal situations and learn how to navigate the legal system of Oregon public records law. People have become all too familiar with the way that small-scale watchdog media is being limited and shuttered out of the spotlight. Project hopes to give reinforced support and strength into the journalism ecosystem in Oregon.
New data shows the first few years of an innovative Oregon program aimed at improving the consistency of teaching techniques from early childhood through elementary school is paying off with better results for students and school staff. Isobel Charlet has more on the story.
Student engagement and staff collaboration are both up in some Oregon schools, and a new report says it's the result of a unique approach to supporting educators. Launched in 2019 by the nonprofit Children's Institute, the Early School Success Program partnered with a handful of districts, including Beaverton, Forest Grove, and St. Helens. Program leader Erin Lolich explains children show strong early learning gains in pre-K and kindergarten, but progress often drops off by third grade. She says part of the problem is a lack of consistency. So the ESS program gets staff together to figure out which techniques work the best and how to implement them across the grades.
Knowing that it's going to look different for a 3 or 4 year old than it's going to look for a 6 year old, but then they don't have to relearn a new procedure at every grade level.
Lolich cites an example of using a similar visual schedule in classrooms year to year so kids can easily see what's coming next in their day. She adds ESS trainers also meet with district leaders to create more consistency with employee schedules, resources, and contracts. The report shows ESS has improved students' emotional regulation and peer relationships and helped create a more inclusive school culture. Talisa Timms works with teachers and other staff with ESS. She says especially now with so much uncertainty in education, staff can feel isolated in their roles, and a sense of collaboration helps.
This is a space where they can come and they feel connected. They feel like their experience is being normalized and validated, but also it's coming with action steps, like things that they can actually try.
ESS is currently grant funded and the funds will phase out over the next 3 years. Children's Institute is talking with state agencies about scaling and investing in the program. I'm Isobel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Analyses show Donald Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act is more likely to hurt Oregonians than virtually any other Americans, at least in regard to Medicaid. Oregonians currently enrolled in Medicaid are more likely than people in nearly any other state to lose coverage and end up uninsured, according to several national think tanks. The budget reconciliation bill reduces federal spending by cutting enrollments in Medicaid, including a work requirement for some and more frequent eligibility checks for all. The work requirement would take effect in January of 2027. Republicans have stated those policies would reduce waste, fraud, and abuse. Democrats countered that they would increase red tape, resulting in many eligible people losing their health insurance. Trump said this week he wants the bill on his desk by July 4th. In Oregon, 20% of people currently enrolled in Medicaid could lose their coverage if the act goes into effect, according to a detailed estimate of its impact by the State Health and Value Strategies Program at Princeton University. That would be the most significant percent loss of any state. Oregon is particularly vulnerable because it is focused for many years on expanding its Medicaid program, simplifying eligibility checks, and making it easier for people to both enroll and stay enrolled. Princeton stated, quote, "Congress wants to layer back on those administrative burdens. They're reversing what in Oregon is almost 20 years of progress," end quote. House Republican Cliff Bentz, who represents Oregon's 2nd Congressional District, serves on the U.S. House subcommittee responsible for the cuts to Medicaid. He helped create and craft the bill, but did not respond to a request for comment about its local impacts.
State Medicaid Director Emma Sander told state legislators that she would need to hire 800 to 1,200 additional eligibility workers to handle the more frequent reviews required by the bill. Currently, adult Oregonians stay enrolled in Medicaid for 2 years at a time in between eligibility checks. Children are enrolled through their 6th birthday. Under Trump's new bill, eligibility renewals would be required for all Medicaid recipients every 6 months. State Senator Deb Patterson, who chairs the Oregon Senate's Health Care Committee, likened the change to requiring Oregonians to file their taxes twice a year instead of annually. Historically, Oregon's focus on stabilizing Medicaid and reducing the number of people who go on and off coverage has helped achieve at least close to the lowest rate of uninsured people in medical debt in the country. The bill would likely lead to Oregon seeing a 4% increase in the uninsured rate, making it one of the 10 states that would see the biggest swing. This could shift the cost of uncompensated care to providers. Oregon is also subject to a provision that penalizes states that provide Medicaid coverage to undocumented immigrants. The state's program, called Healthier Oregon, uses exclusively state dollars to provide coverage to almost 15,000 children and almost 90,000 adults. Those numbers include some immigrants with legal status, like green card holders, and some without it. The reconciliation bill would force Oregon to cut that coverage or face a reduction in the federal match rate it gets for other Medicaid members. That would amount to a loss of $1 billion from 2027 to 2029, and billions more in future years. Most provisions in the reconciliation bill would not go into effect until after the midterm elections, but a 10-year ban on all Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood would take effect as soon as the bill is signed into law, potentially as early as next month. 70% of Planned Parenthood patients pay for visits with Medicaid. Planned Parenthood's clinics across Oregon are also the single largest provider of many other types of primary care, including pap smears and STD testing. Democrats in the Oregon legislature held an informational hearing earlier this week on the potential impacts of the bill.
Immigration policies draw criticism from sheriffs and Medicaid cuts from disability advocates. With these stories and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Well, I was extremely disappointed and frankly angry on a much grander scale. It has an effect.
Steve Hunt of the North Dakota Sheriffs and Deputies Association says he shares the frustration of many in law enforcement about federal Homeland Security listing multiple jurisdictions as migrant sanctuaries. Hunt says a lot were listed incorrectly, and more broadly, police and immigration actions shouldn't be politicized. DHS took the list down after sharp criticism from the National Sheriffs Association. Meanwhile, Connecticut lawmakers have updated the state's Trust Act, reinforcing limits on cooperation between local police and federal immigration officials. The legislation was weakened over fears of White House retaliation. Homeland Secretary Kristi Noem says the federal government is detaining the family of the man charged in Sunday's firebomb attack on Jewish demonstrators in Colorado.
We're also investigating to what extent his family knew about this horrific attack, if they had any knowledge of it, or if they provided support to it.
The suspect, Mohammed Sabri Suleiman, faces federal hate crime charges. He stayed in the U.S. after his tourist visa expired and reportedly shouted "Free Palestine" before throwing incendiary devices into a crowd. Tesla CEO Elon Musk has left Donald Trump's White House and is now blasting his One Big Beautiful Bill as a disgusting abomination that adds trillions in debt. Musk says it would undo his work to cut the government. Trump ally Georgia Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene voted for the bill, but she says she didn't know it would strip states of the right to regulate artificial intelligence, a provision she opposes. The bill passed the House by a single vote. Pennsylvania disability advocates say they oppose its cuts to Medicaid. The program provides health coverage to more than a fifth of the state's population, including nearly 750,000 people with disabilities. Josie Badger is a business owner and a foster mother.
Our parent. I could not get out of bed every day without that care, let alone work, have a business, be a foster mom, own a home, any of that.
In Tennessee, cancer advocacy groups joined others to rally outside Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn's office in opposition. Maddie Michael with the American Cancer Society says cuts to TennCare would mean delayed diagnosis and lower survival rates.
Without this insurance and without access to this care, there will be late-term diagnoses for cancer, which are more costly to the patients, more costly to the state, and have lower survival rates, unfortunately.
Trump has formally asked Congress to rescind more than $1 billion in funding for public broadcasting, accusing NPR and PBS of bias. NPR CEO Catherine Mayer warned the cuts would have a particularly bad impact on rural communities, where 1 in 5 lacks access to other local news. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on the latest Street Roots cover article by Jeremiah Hayden and more. At 6, it's Alternative Radio. Then at 7, the Global Sale. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with some potential drizzle and a low of 53. And tomorrow, it'll be warm and sunny with a high of 81 and a low of 58. On this day in 1984, Bruce Springsteen released his defining album, Born in the USA. The quote of the day is from Bruce Springsteen. He said, "Blind faith in your leaders, or anything, will get you killed."
Pell Grants send thousands of lower-income students to college each year across the country. However, proposed changes could lower that number drastically, often in the communities that need it the most, like tribes. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Pell Grants send thousands of lower-income students to college each year across the country. However, proposed changes could lower that number drastically, often in the communities that need it most, like tribes. South Dakota Public Broadcasting CJ Keene has more.
Proposed Trump administration changes could slash Pell Grant funding by as much as a quarter. In a tribal setting like the Pine Ridge Reservation, that represents well over 60% of students reliant on some amount of Pell Grant support. Oglala Lakota College President Don Frank says that would devastate tribal colleges and their students across America.
These proposed changes are extremely concerning because raising the full-time credit requirements and excluding less than part-time students would disproportionately harm TCUs. Part-time TCU power recipients see substantial increases in certificate and degree completion rates, and that's something that we're looking at that is across the board for TCUs.
Frank says TCUs offer nearly a $90 million economic impact to South Dakota alone when accounting for jobs, workforce development, and education. While contingencies do exist at Oglala Lakota College, Frank is concerned about the worst coming to pass with an associated loss of students.
Losing that would mean that everyone would have to take a step back. If we're not producing graduates to work in those positions, then I could see a lot of hardship to look at, coupling it with the financial necessity amid the rising inflation of an affordable child care, transportation, especially in our rural areas, and the strain. We know, we already said that it would be almost cripple us or close us.
Frank is calling upon tribal leaders to advocate for their tribal colleges and universities to statewide D.C. delegations, and specifically asked South Dakota Representative Dusty Johnson and Senators John Thune and Mike Rounds to champion the issue. For National Native News, I'm CJ Keene in Rapid City.
President Trump recently instructed the Interior Department to look into erasing negative references to the nation's past while embracing the beauty, abundance, and grandeur of the American landscape. But as KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, a Native group worries history will be erased.
Trump's executive order, which covers 500 million acres of federal land, is titled Restoring Truth and Sanity to American History.
From a tribal perspective, you could say, great, we're overdue for a little truth and sanity in American history, but of course we mean the opposite.
Valerie Grusing runs the nonprofit National Association of Tribal Historic Preservation Officers. The government is reviewing monuments and other markers that have been removed, renamed, or altered since 2020 for what it calls a false reconstruction of American history. But Grusing worries this mandate simply means whitewashing the past. The federal agency says the order isn't about erasing history, but meant to free narratives from ideological distortion. Any content deemed inappropriate shall be removed within 120 days. Gabriel Pietrazio, Phoenix.
The leader of the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma is expressing his concern over the closure of Job Corps training centers across the country. The Cherokee Nation says it was the first tribe to operate a Job Corps in 1978, and the program currently serves around 150 students. The federal government recently announced it was pausing the Job Corps program, which helps people ages 16 through 24 with career training. In a video message on social media this week, Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. shared an update saying the pause is an outright termination of the program, adding he opposes the closure and says the tribe is working to save the program.
Job Corps is often a career lifeline to students who may be struggling to find a path.
The tribe is suspending its Job Corps operations and preparing to send residential students home on June 13th. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Researchers have growing concerns on if there will be enough federal resources to combat the fire season after hundreds of thousands of federal positions were eliminated by the Department of Governmental Efficiency. USDA spokesperson confirmed that 2,000 people who they have said were probationary were laid off. The union representing the Forest Service estimates that there are almost double that number of people being laid off. Many of the people who were fired have reported that they were in fact active firefighters, despite claims made by the federal officials. Researchers across the country, including University of Oregon researchers, are concerned about how this will impact the coming fire season. More than half of all land in Oregon is owned by the federal government. Researchers wonder who will protect those lands if there are not enough federal employees or resources. James Johnston, an assistant research professor in University of Oregon's Institute for Resilient Organizations, Communities, and Environments, said non-federal fire crews should be preparing for the fire season. Johnston says that it is critical that folks start thinking about where to get funding and how to develop a skilled workforce. Oregonians should expect another hot and dry summer. Last year's fire season was one of the worst in state history, with almost 2 million acres affected by the fire.
Last week, Elon Musk stepped down from his position as the head of the Department of Government Efficiency, saying he will remain on as an advisor, but not before inflicting tremendous damage on the people of the United States. Over 250,000 federal workers have been fired since the Trump administration gave federal firing power to the Department of Government Efficiency. Musk cited the pending tax bill as the reason he was leaving, saying that he did not approve of the additional trillions of debt that the bill would leave and the United States put the United States in should the bill pass, which would undermine the work that Musk has done to make the government more, quote, efficient. Others, including state governments in Washington, Oregon, and California, are also offended by the bill. The offense for them, however, comes from the fact that the bill would cut Medicaid and food assistance for thousands of Americans. An anonymous source with knowledge on Musk's departure says that it was decided on a, quote, senior staff level. Who the senior staff remains unclear. Musk says he was, quote, he has done, quote, done enough after spending $300 million in support of the Trump campaign last year and after leaving almost 12% of the federal workforce without jobs. Musk told Trump's advisors that he would give $100 million to groups controlled by the president's team before the 2026 midterms. This money has not been delivered.
This is Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, June 2nd through 8th, and experts want to raise awareness of the types of scams out there so fewer people will fall for them. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Medicare loses $60 to $80 billion a year to fraud. And this year, for Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, your local senior Medicare patrol has good advice on how to spot a con. There are plenty of scams to be aware of. Karen Joy Fletcher with the nonprofit California Health Advocates says beware if a caller asks to verify your Medicare number, claiming that the program needs to send out a new type of card.
This is just a way for people to steal people's Medicare number and to commit identity theft and to defraud Medicare, ordering services or items that they most likely will never receive.
Caregivers can be on the lookout for medical equipment that arrives at the house, even though the beneficiary never ordered it. Another red flag, a stranger may approach you in a parking lot asking you to sign up for a new free Medicare service, like house cleaning or meals, which are then fraudulently billed to the government. Fletcher encourages people to check their Medicare summary notices online at mymedicare.gov on a regular basis to make sure everything is in order.
It's a good way to see if Medicare is being charged for things that maybe somebody never received or from doctors they've never seen.
Another scam involves tricking people into unknowingly signing up for hospice care. That one is especially dangerous because once a person is on hospice, Medicare will only approve palliative care and could mistakenly deny an essential surgery or medication. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Now for Point Puzzle. Every week, a winner from the previous week is selected from emailed answers and a new puzzle is announced. It's time for Point Puzzle with Pearl Stark.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, we had a graduation teaser. You and four friends go to the University of Missouri to get a Bachelor of Science degree. Why would this be convenient at graduation, or what don't you need to purchase? As a hint, I suggested that it might help to write it down. Well, the answer is that if you write down 5 UMOBS and rotate the page 180 degrees, you get 5 gowns. Our winner this week is Penny Yost, who listens to KPOV in Bend, Oregon.
School is out now, we're gonna have some fun. We're gonna make like we are the only one.
For the new puzzle, send me an artist who is often referred to by one name. Reverse the letters in the name, and phonetically, you have an adjective that might describe the artist. So again, looking for an artist who is often referred to by one name. Reverse the letters in the name, and phonetically, you have one adjective that might describe this artist. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
When I go out with artists, they talk about language and the cubists and the daddies, and I try to catch the meaning.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of June 2nd. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
In Brookline, Massachusetts, a group helps neighbors cut carbon emissions, one appliance at a time. Free, vetted guides offer practical advice on electrifying homes and finding experienced contractors. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Many homes burn a lot of fossil fuels, from oil-powered furnaces to gas-powered stoves. Switching to electric appliances like heat pumps and induction stoves helps reduce the climate warming pollution caused by burning fossil fuels. And in Brookline, Massachusetts, a group called Electrify Brookline has written a series of guides to help residents start.
It just seemed like there was so much information to sift out there that getting a reliable, vetted, comprehensive set of guides out there seemed like the best way that we could help residents start to begin their journey of electrification.
Kathleen Scanlon is an architect and a member of the town's Zero Emissions Advisory Board. The guides answer questions like how heat pumps work and how to get a rebate for an electric car charger. They're available for free online, along with lists of contractors with experience in electrification. Scanlon says people do not need to electrify their whole house at once. Her family has been weaning off fossil fuels slowly over time.
We are on a journey just like any other household in learning what technology is out there that will work for us and replacing systems as they need it and planning ahead so that we can be ready when we need to replace them.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Farah Siddiqui, Mel Gertov, Jeremiah Hayden, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. That's me. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Hannah Francis.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our summer fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO at 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth with Street Roots.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Many commentators have criticized the Trump administration.